This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Now here's Matt Jones.
Many of you have asked, can we have more baseball podcasts outside of the season? Believe it or not, this is our most popular podcast at Whole Hog Sports, and that's thanks to many of you. And so we're going to bring you four podcasts over the course of September and October. We're going to be talking to coaches. We're going to be talking to players. We'll have some other special guests, and we hope to give you some insight into the Razorbacks fall baseball season that began earlier this month and will run through the middle of October. It's hard to believe it's been 3 months since the last time we were together here on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, and a lot has transpired since then. We've got a number of things to talk to you about later in today's show, including a conversation about the 2022 schedule that was released this week. Dave Van Horn and his assistant coach has given new contracts over the offseason. We haven't had a chance to talk about Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC, and there's much more that's happened over the offseason, and we'll dig into some of the headlines. But first today, we're joined by a special guest. Nate Thompson is the hitting coach and recruiting coordinator. He's in his fifth season, entering his fifth season with the Razorbacks, came over from Missouri State in 2017. His first year with Arkansas was that 2018 national runner-up. And today, Nate's going to spend a lot of time with us talking about his team, about some of its hitting philosophies, and we'll also probably get into recruiting with him. And Nate, we appreciate you taking time to join us today.
You bet, Matt. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start off with this. Fall baseball began September 2nd. You guys scrimmaged, it seems, most days. What have you seen in those scrimmages? Who were some of the players that have stood out to you from an offensive standpoint so far?
I mean, we've seen some young guys come in and show themselves pretty well so far. And we've also seen some of the older guys come back and look pretty strong offensively. And so, yeah, I mean, it's been nice to see. Michael Turner's a guy that's a transfer from Kent State, a catcher that has made an impression so far. Left-handed hitter, good swing, can really catch and throw. He's one of the guys that's a new face that's kind of made an impression. I would say that Braden Webb honestly got the fall, started off with a bang. First pitch he saw of the first fall scrimmage, he hit into the hog pen, kind of jumped on a first pitch fastball there. And then the next day led off a game against it was Jackson Wiggins, honestly, and drove a ball out of the park. And so it's nice to see him getting going and performing. But yeah, there's a lot of guys, man. A lot of guys, new and old, that have shown up. Caden Wallace looks great. A guy named Gabe Darcy, who's a true freshman out of California, an outfielder, has swung the bat well and been very competitive at the plate thus far. And I'll mention Kendall Diggs is a true freshman from up in the Kansas City area that has played some third base for us thus far. He's a versatile guy, and he's been putting together good at-bats as well. So, and a guy like, you know, honestly, Brady Slavens, everybody knows Brady. He's come back strong, and he looks a little more physical, and he's driving the ball well too. So, it's been fun so far.
It seems to me like there's going to be a lot of competition for playing time this year, and I know that's not too different from what it's like every year for you guys. But I mean, you've got your, I kind of have it broken down into four different groups. You've got your returning guys, you know, the Slavens, the Robert Moores, Jalen Battles, Caden Wallace. Then you got guys who have kind of been in and out as starters for you. You mentioned Braden Webb. I think about a guy like Zach Gregory. You've got a great freshman class. Baseball America just ranked this the fourth best class in the country. And then you mentioned the players like Michael Turner, the transfers, Leighton Pinckney, who's come in from Houston. Am I saying his name right? Barofin from Oklahoma. Chris Lanzilli from Chris Lanzilli from Wake Forest. I mean, this is just an incredibly deep lineup. How do you guys balance that? I guess it's nice when you're doing scrimmages when you can make two teams of nine.
Yeah, there's two teams out there, both awfully competitive. And I think it's really good for our hitters too, because our pitching's been outstanding so far this fall. We've got a lot of really nice young arms that have shown command and velocity and the ability to pitch and mix, and made it tough on them so far. And so, you know, that's what we like about our fall inter squads is we feel like, you know, we as an offense get to face one of the very best pitching staffs in the country on a daily basis. And that helps us raise our game. And hopefully we do the same for them by having to go through our lineup. So far it's, like I said, it's been really productive. And I think it'll continue to get even better as the fall goes on. You know, we have a lot of new young hitters who we're just trying to get them into our offensive approach, the mindset, kind of the attitude we go about our business with. They're obviously very talented guys, like you mentioned, fourth ranked class in the country coming in between the hitters and the pitchers. And so, it's been good, because I think, you know, the older guys are able to show the younger guys, you know, how it's done, and they've kind of been there and done that. And we have several guys that have been a part of some really good teams here in the past. And now it's time for these younger guys to step into the fire and get up to speed, and they have plenty of talent to do so. And so we're really excited about it. It just makes for great competition. And as everybody's, you know, fighting for it, it makes everybody better.
There's so much excitement, I think, within the fan base about Peyton Stovall. And I know you guys were excited to get him to campus too. When I was talking to Dave, maybe on the first day of practice, he said that he had suffered an abdominal injury that might keep him out for a little bit. Has he been able to return to practice? And what have you guys, what were you able to see from him before the injury?
He did, as soon as he got here in the fall, tweaked an oblique. And so he's been out. He just started being able to play some defense again, just has started being able to swing the bat again. We're taking it easy. You know, we know Peyton's a really good player and fantastic hitter. And so there's no reason to rush this thing. We don't want this to become a nagging issue to where it puts him out the rest of the off season, or, you know, so we're just taking our time with it. He yesterday was able to do a lot of defensive drills, and he looked full speed at it and was fantastic coming and getting the baseball, you know, doing some bunt defense, throwing on the run, very accurate and strong with his throws. And you know, he's a guy that honestly can play anywhere on the infield and be, you know, fantastic at it. And so, you know, that continues to help us just be as versatile as we can be as an offense. Yeah, he's been a pleasure, man. He's fun to have around.
Do you guys foresee him being like a Robert Moore, a Caden Wallace, someone who can step in and contribute and start for you right away?
I believe he can. I believe he has the ability to come in and perform. Yes. With the bat, with the glove, you know, with the mentality, you know, obviously you have to do it. And the game is very, very tough and demanding, but he's put himself in that position. And so, yeah, we're very excited about him.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about Barofin, the outfielder from Oklahoma. I know you guys were in on him pretty good when you were recruiting him out of high school, and ended up going to OU, was a legacy player there. His dad played there. His brother played there. Goes into the transfer portal. I think you guys jumped on him pretty quick and got him to come. What does he add to your lineup? And then Nate, also on him, I don't want to put too many expectations on him, but when I watch him, and I'm not talking about, you know, talent or anything, I'm just talking about his pure batting stance and how he looks in the box. It looks a little bit like a Heston Kerstad to me. Is that a stretch to compare?
Yeah. I mean, there you could probably say that. I can see how, you know, based on their, you know, Jace is a very physical, you know, young man, and obviously Heston was as well, both hit from the left-hand side, both look good in the uniform, man. Very athletic. We were extremely excited to be able to get on the, you know, on the phone with him when we saw that he was in the portal, and try to make him a Razorback again. He was a young man that we recruited awfully hard in high school, and we felt like this would be a tremendous fit for him, and we understood where he was at with, you know, his original decision, but we're really excited to have him here now. And he's got a really nice hit tool and a potential real nice power tool to his bat. He's, you know, went up into the Cape and performed pretty much all summer and was a consistent performer up there. And he's a guy that can step into the lineup and, like I said, provide a lot of barrel and provide some sock to the lineup as well. And he's a guy that just wants to get better. And I think that was one of the main things why he, you know, wanted to come over here and be a part of this and compete in this league and challenge himself. And so now extremely, extremely fired up to have Jace on board. He's, you know, great, great kid, great family. And, a guy I think that in our atmosphere here is, really gonna thrive for sure.
You mentioned what he did on Cape Cod. Caden Wallace had a big summer up there too before he came home, and I think mid to late July. Most people would agree that's kind of the premier summer league. When you see players put up good, strong numbers on the Cape, does that get your attention as a coach?
Yeah, absolutely, because they're doing it against high quality competition and doing it with a wood bat and doing it day in and day out. I think that's something to be said for as well as being able to keep bringing it against the caliber of talents you're facing. And because that's kind of the grind in the SEC too. And you got 10 straight weeks of SEC play, and I mean, it's every Friday, Saturday, Sunday is an absolute battle as far as, in all facets of the game, but particularly offensively, I feel, because of the quality of the arms that you see. I mean, every pitcher you face is going to be a draft pick someday in some way, shape, and form. And many of them are going to go very high. And so, the guys are in the Cape for a reason, and they're all trying to, show out because, it's a great opportunity to showcase their talent with the scouts and to perform against, major competition, just like they do in the SEC. And so, yeah, that's something that, it's awesome to see a guy go up there and hold his own and perform. And honestly, sometimes even if they don't put up great numbers, it's just a really, really good experience because they're lining it up with a lot of other very good players from all over the country. And it just forces you to adapt and get better, because if you don't, you get hurt and left behind.
We've talked about a couple of your transfers so far, Mike Turner and Barofin. You've also got Chris Lindsay-Lien from Wake Forest, Leighton Pinckney from Houston, and then Landry Wilkerson, who was a junior college All-American at Crowder up in Missouri, who played high school baseball at Van Buren. What have you seen from those three? How do you think they fit into this team?
Chris Lanzilli is a power bat with a track record of hitting in a Power Five league and doing a really nice job there. I think that he's going to provide thump. And he's I've really enjoyed working with him so far. He's a lot of times it's older guys, they feel like, hey man, I'm kind of setting my ways and the way I like to do things, but Chris has been incredibly receptive to some a tweak here or tweak there so far, and man, he's got some lead in that bat, man. Like when he barrels it up, it goes. Like the exit velocity is up there. He can play on the infield or in the outfield, or I know he's DH'd at times throughout his career as well, and so there's that with Leighton Pinckney. Leighton was a late addition to the class. When we lost, when Charlie Welch signed professionally, it kind of left us in a position where we felt like we wanted to add another catcher who could, you know, help us and provide us with some defense and a bat as an option. And Layton's done a great job so far in providing that. And I think, you know, he's got a little surprising power in there as well. You know, I don't know if people necessarily gave him a lot of credit for in the past. And so, you know, it's fun to work with him as well so far. And then when you talk about Landry, you know, Landry was a part of, you know, a couple of really good teams up at Crowder Junior College. And like you mentioned, he's an All-American last year, and I think he hit 20 home runs. And, you know, obviously it's a step up in competition and level, but Landry's shown, you know, the desire and the ability so far to make adjustments. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, can provide some left-handed, you know, average, a little, you know, some sock too, and play some good defense in the outfield. So, yeah, just really excited about all those guys. Very.
I thought last year, Nate, showed, you know, there's always so much focus and emphasis on who's going to start. But last year, like with the year Charlie Welch had coming off the bench for you guys and being so great in that pinch hit role, and you had players like Webb and Gregory who seemed like they could get a big hit for you at times, or maybe they were really good for you on the bases late in a close game. It really showed that it's not all about the starters. I mean, you've got to have a really well-rounded team, and it seems like that could be the case for you guys again next year.
That's the hope. That's the hope, no doubt. And, you know, it was really cool to see, you know, Charlie Welch's progression and how he just embraced his role and continued to develop. You know, because honestly, in the fall, he was probably one of our worst hitters, you know, from a production standpoint. And his teammates saw that. But Charlie just continued to embrace the work, and he wanted to get better, and he didn't want to stay the same. So he was willing to make, you know, the adjustments and refine his swing and refine his approach. And it's been fantastic to see him continue his success in minor league ball this year. As you go down the list, I mean, that's the thing you hope for with these guys, is that, you know, we talked about it. We have a nice group of older guys that have been around the block and faced, you know, an SEC schedule and that level of competition and performed. And we want to see them take these younger guys under their wing and you know, help get them up to speed as well. But no, there's certainly the ability to have some nice depth and give us options for, you know, whether it be pinch hit, defensive replacement, pinch run, whatever, to make us just a more dynamic group and whatever the situation demands, you know, kind of have an answer for it. So, you know, and these guys just have to continue to recognize what they need to do to push their game, make themselves just, you know, more valuable in each situation possible. It's a nice group of athletes.
I want to talk some about your hitting philosophy. I remember when you guys, and I say you guys, Missouri State came down here in 2017 for your regional, and Jake Berger and Jeremy Ironman were like the top home run hitting tandem in the country that season. And we were talking to Jake Berger before the series, or before that regional. And he was talking about, you know, the ability to drive the ball. And that was something that you had worked with him so much on, was just driving the ball. It didn't matter if he was hitting a double or a triple or a home run, just get the ball out into the gap, hit it off the wall, you know. And he said, and I went back to that interview after you were hired a couple of weeks later, just to kind of get some insight on you. If you were just to, you know, boil it down to as simply as you can, your hitting philosophy, is that what it is? Drive the ball.
It's whatever it takes to score runs, you know, for me, honestly. I mean, because at the end of the day, it's all about outscoring the opponent. And so it's whatever we need to do that. And, you know, the thing that I've learned more and more as I've been in the SEC and came over from Missouri State is just kind of what it takes to score in this league. Every year we've actually raised our, you know, our runs per game total. And the thing is if you're going to score in the SEC, you do have to drive the baseball. You have to be able to impact the baseball with strength, and you have to be able to help get your, you know, get runners on base. And the hard thing is it's hard to string together, you know, hit after hit after hit against the caliber of the pitching that we face. And so, you know, what does it take to, you know, have a great at bat and be able to draw a walk and create pressure there, and then, you know, maybe get a knock and then somebody, you know, hit a ball off the wall. And so, yeah, there's certainly we want to hit the ball hard. We want to get the ball in the air. Line drives are pretty, you know, that's the hope. Being able to hit the ball off the wall and over the wall is huge, and being able to score, because like I said, it's just so hard to continue to square up the baseball in this league, and being able to, you know, discipline the strike zone is vital. And the other piece is too, is I'll say this, taking advantage of the opportunities when you get them, you know, nobody likes strikeouts. We don't either. But all strikeouts are not created the same. And, you know, when you have an opportunity to drive in a run with less than two outs, you know, being able to recognize what you need to do as a hitter for that moment and score that run is really important. And, you know, does that mean you get the job done every time? Certainly not. but you want to score that run and help your team win. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess from a philosophy standpoint, we're up there looking to get our best swing off, drive the baseball, do damage, and you know, affect the other team, affect the other pitcher with the mentality we have. If we step into the box and, you know, swinging and missing is not the worst thing that can happen sometimes. You know, putting the ball in play weakly and making an easy out, or taking your pitch you're looking for, you know, those are some of the things we don't like. And so I want our guys to step into the box with a lot of confidence, a huge edge, a lot of fearlessness. And another big thing we talk about all the time is just knowing themselves and knowing their game, you know. We don't try to cookie cutter everybody. We want to play to each hitter's strengths and then build their, you know, help them build their weaknesses and to create a more, you know, complete player. You mentioned Jake Berger earlier. You know, he was a guy who we would never ask to bunt, but he was probably the best bunter on the team. Obviously, he had a great hit tool and hit for, I think, a 340 average or plus his entire career. But he's also a guy that we wanted to, you know, work with to try to get the baseball into the air and to learn how to drive the ball over the fence and not just off of it. And he was, you know, guy that was willing to work and make those adjustments. And you know, he's a guy that we've been able to have success with those things. And so, but yeah, it's just, you want to create as dynamic of an offense as you can with the personnel you have. And honestly, you go to battle with the talent you have, and but we look to step into the box and hit the ball hard and drive the baseball. There's no doubt.
And strikeouts are always going to be, you know, there for a team that hits with power. I don't think you can avoid that. One of the things though that I think stood out to me about your team last year, Nate, was the ability to draw walks. You don't see that. I think you guys might have had more walks than any other team in the SEC, and you had more home runs than any other SEC team. And you don't usually see that combination. And one of the things that stood out to me was how good you guys were with two outs. And I thought the walks really, you know, contributed to those two out rallies that you had. I can't remember how many there were, but there were several. I mean, maybe the best example of it was the Nebraska game when Welch hit his home run. That was preceded by what, three straight walks to Christian Franklin and Casey Opitz, and I can't remember who else in front of Welch. But you guys really do a pretty good job of taking your walks.
It's such a big piece of it, and you're looking to get your best swing off on something that you can punish. And what that does is that it kind of narrows your focus down. It helps you take pitchers' pitches. It helps you shrink the zone, and by doing that, You know, the other thing is when you take your best swing, even if you swing and miss, it sends a message to the opposing pitcher and the opposing pitching staff that, wow, we can't miss here. We can't make a mistake, because if we do leave it fat, they're going to hammer it. And if we, you know, so that makes them maybe a little more hesitant to come over the plate. They try to get a little picky. They try to live on the edge a little too much, because the truth is you know, Coach Van Horn, you know, we don't put a lot of take signs on. We're not up there looking to try to work counts. Like, we don't tell guys, hey, we need to go get to a 3-2 count or a 3-ball count here every at bat. It's a product. The walks, I feel like that we've, you know, and we've had some high walk totals over the last few years, and the power numbers speak for themselves as well. But it's a product of what we feel like is a good approach and looking to do damage. And it puts us in a position to drive the baseball and, you know, just be fearless with it. Truthfully, in the major leagues right now, that's how they're scoring. It's how the games are a lot of times won and lost. And honestly, then situational hitting comes into it as well. You know, with you know, the opportunity to drive in runs from third base with less than two and stuff. But being able to hit the ball hard, get runners on base, and then drive them in is a major, major thing. That's how you score runs against the high quality velocity stuff that we see, I believe.
When people are watching you in a game, Nate, there are two things that I hear people talk the most about. And I'm talking about you as a coach. One is your green towel, your neon green towel. I know what you do with that. You're trying to get your fielder's attention with it. And the other one is, you know, when there's a pitching change, it looks like you pull out about a 15-page book out of your back pocket that's got a scouting report. Kind of take us through how you've come up with those two things that people see quite often during games.
Yeah, the green towel was just a thing to wear. When you coach in the SEC and you play in some of the environments that we play in, you can't just yell at the outfielders all the time and get their attention. And as much as you tell them, like, hey, you need to look in at me, sometimes they don't. You know, they're in the moment. And so from a defensive positioning perspective, you know, we have all the spray charts and everything we need, and you know, what we think this guy will do in this situation against this type of pitcher. And so my thing was, heck, if I got a neon green towel out, it would help me be able to get people's attention pretty quick. And, you know, if the towel's out, I need your eyes. Obviously it's not out, then you're in great shape. And so it just tried to make things easier for me, and to where I wasn't trying to scream at the top of my lungs to grab somebody's attention with such a big crowd and crowd noise. The scouting report thing is just a thing where it's something that is just reminders. You know, we do all this work prior to every series, and we try to educate all of our hitters on, you know, what the repertoire is of the opposing pitcher and how they like to attack and how they like, you know, how they're probably going to attack you as an individual, because they're going to attack different hitters in our lineup differently. And so, but you know, it's hard to go over, you know, 10 or 12 guys, man. I mean, our guy, you know, we're not able to catalog all of them in their heads prior to each game. And so we go over the starters, and we'll go over a few of the bullpen guys, you know, our guys have an idea and a plan about how to, you know, attack this, whatever pitcher they're facing. And then we're taking a look at matchups, how this guy likes to attack left-handers and right-handers and this situation right here. And what's he like to do with two strikes and how to combat his stuff. You know, that's something that, since I've arrived here and had the opportunity to use the technology that we have, that I think that has really helped, is how do you combat the types of different stuff that you see? And, you know, is the guy, you know, throw a high carry fastball? Does he throw sinkers? You know, how much depth does the breaking ball have on it? And how do we communicate this as fast and as effectively as possible with each of our hitters? And so, you know, thankfully I have a great, you know, hitting department staff here that works with me, that we try to create as advanced and yet simple scouting reports as possible to where it's all about elimination. You know, I can focus on one or two things as a hitter against this guy right here and give myself the best opportunity for success. And rather than trying to, you know, see everything and hit every zone, and it just all about simplification, honestly. So that's the sheets and something I can, you know, remind myself real quick so I can remind them.
Now, I mentioned earlier, in addition to being the hitting coach, you're also the recruiting coordinator. And you guys have been on a run in recruiting here recently. You see it with the roster you have on the field right now, the guys like Caden Wallace and Robert Moore and Peyton Stovall, and you can go on and on with big name guys who committed to you in high school. And I know you can't mention specific recruits, but what I'm seeing, Nate, in the 22 class and the 23 class, the 24 class, is a continuation of this where, you know, I think back to last year's draft when you guys had like, what, 10 players who were in Baseball America's top 500 prospects list. It's probably going to be like that most years moving forward because of the types of players that you are recruiting and who are committing to you. I know you've gotten some big commitments here just within the last week or two. What has changed? Because I talked to people who've been a part of the program in the past, and they said, when we were at Arkansas, we weren't recruiting like that. There's been a noticeable jump in both the caliber of player, it seems like you're being able to get to commit to you, but also in the number of talented players who are coming in.
I just think this, you know, the brand has continued to grow, and the interest level nationally has continued to grow. You know, the program that Coach Van Horn and has built here, obviously, you know, it travels, man. And it's awesome to be able to wear the Razorback on my shirt and go to games and be able to call a kid and, you know, ask them what they know about Arkansas. And honestly, most times, they know quite a bit. They know about Baum Walker Stadium. You know, they watch, you know, games of ours on SEC Network or ESPN or on streaming, and they see us and they see our crowd. You know, they remark about that all the time. They know about the fact that we have, you know, what's considered the best player development facilities in the sport. And, you know, as we've continued to, you know, win and you know, certainly, like, it's awesome to be able to call a kid and say, hey, man, you know, we're ranked number one, and for a majority of the season last year, and yeah, you want to play in Omaha? Well, yeah, we've been there here a lot lately, and so, you want to be developed, you want to be a high pick in the draft here soon, one of these days. Well, you know, doesn't go much higher than number two overall with Heston Kerstad. And, you know, he's a 38th rounder out of high school. And so you can point to a lot of things about the program, about the university, that just they sell themselves. And, you know, we work really hard at developing relationships with players and selling them on the vision of what they're doing here. And this is just, we talk about it all the time. This is a serious baseball school, you know, baseball school, man. This is a serious baseball place. Like, if you're really serious about your development and about being a part of great teams and learning under, you know, a legend like Coach Van Horn, man, why wouldn't you want to be a Razorback? You know, there's so many, you know, pieces of the puzzle that are great, and there's really nothing not to like. And so, you know, it's not for everybody, but for the guys that are really wanting to, you know, push their game and challenge themselves and aren't afraid of the level of competition, it's a great place to be. And not to mention the school and all the buzz right now with all the other sports and the community in general, and just how beloved our you know, our players are by the Razorback Nation. So it's fantastic. You know, we have an incredible product to sell, and we're excited to go after players all over the country.
Nate, you've been great with your time. I could probably sit here and pick your brain for 3 hours about baseball and the Razorback program. and look forward to seeing you out on the field again here soon.
All right, you bet. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy.
Well, as we mentioned at the outset of the show, it has been an eventful offseason for Arkansas baseball. Maybe the biggest offseason news yet was earlier this week when the Razorbacks announced their 2022 schedule. And I say they announced the schedule. They announced 54 games. There actually could be a couple of more games that are added to this before the schedule is finalized. A team can play up to 56 games during the course of the season. Arkansas is going to start the season with Illinois State on February 18th. That's going to be a three-game series at Baumwalker Stadium. It's one of three non-conference series that the Razorbacks are going to play on the weekend at home. They're also going to host Southeastern Louisiana for three games in early March, March 4th, 5th, and 6th are those dates. And then from March 10th to 13th, they will play four games against UIC. That's the University of Illinois at Chicago. That'll be the final non-conference series before the start of SEC play on March the 18th. The big non-conference games for Arkansas will actually come away from Fayetteville this year. They're going to play in the Round Rock Classic. That's in Round Rock, Texas at Dell Diamond. That's the AAA affiliate of the Texas Rangers. On February 25th, 26th, and 27th, Arkansas is going to start out with a game against Indiana. Indiana's been a very good Big Ten program over the last several years. That's the program where Tracy Smith came from before he went to Arizona State. That's the program where Chris Lemonis came from before he went to Mississippi State. And so Indiana's always a very good team. There were some people who felt like Indiana should have been an NCAA tournament team a year ago, and Arkansas will play them first in Round Rock. The second game should be a really good one, probably the best matchup of the weekend in Round Rock in February. Arkansas will take on Stanford. Of course, Stanford came so close to getting into the College World Series championship round a year ago. Remember, they had Vanderbilt beaten, it seemed like, had them down to their final out. Vanderbilt got out of that, won the game in an elimination game, and then Vanderbilt got to the NC State round and was able to advance because of the COVID problems at NC State. Stanford came very close to being the team instead of Vanderbilt that got to go on and play Mississippi State. Arkansas will play Stanford on February 26th in Round Rock, and then on the 27th, they'll take on the Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns. Lafayette, coached by Matt Deggs, the former Arkansas assistant coach. He was Dave Van Horn's hitting coach for the Razorbacks from 2003 to 05, also worked with Van Horn earlier in his career at Northwestern State in Louisiana. And so the Razorbacks will take on the Raging Cajuns, a team that can always hit and a team that seems to always be a threat once you get to the postseason. Lafayette's a team you don't ever want to see in your regional. Arkansas will play them in Round Rock. All of those games, by the way, that Arkansas will play in Round Rock are going to be the late game. And I think that has to do with the fact that Arkansas is going to be the big draw down there. And those games, by the way, will be shown on Flow Sports. I know many of you remember that quite fondly from earlier this year when the Razorbacks played in Arlington. The real highlight of the schedule, though, we mentioned Arkansas will start with Kentucky at Baum Stadium. It's the home schedule. It's the SEC schedule in particular at home. The Razorbacks, get this, in addition to Kentucky, will play Mississippi State, LSU, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt in Fayetteville. I can't remember an SEC schedule that was that good.
All four of those teams played in a super regional a year ago. Of course, Mississippi State defeated Vanderbilt in the national championship series. And so Arkansas is going to have a lot of eyes on Fayetteville. When you look at this schedule, the fact that they get to play those teams at home, Arkansas has been one of the best home teams in college baseball for the last 5 years. And then the road series are against teams that have not been that good over the past few years. They play at Missouri. They play at Florida. That's the best road series they have. At A&M, of course, Jim Schlossnagel is the new head coach for the Aggies. We don't know what kind of team they're going to have. They had a little bit of a down year in their last year under Rob Childress. And then Arkansas, two of the final 3 weeks of the regular season will be at Auburn, and then they'll end the regular season at Alabama. And, of course, they'll just stay in Alabama and take the short trip over to Hoover for the SEC tournament the next week. The Alabama series and the final regular season or the final regular season series against Alabama and the series against LSU, which is April 14 through 16 in Fayetteville, those are going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. Final regular season series, always a Thursday start due to the SEC tournament the next week. The LSU series is going to start on a Thursday because that's Easter weekend, and Arkansas doesn't play games on Easter anymore, at least not when they're at home. They try to schedule those games on Easter weekend to begin on Thursday because attendance is typically really bad when you try to play on the Easter holiday. In non-conference, Arkansas is not going to play a Power 5 team in the midweek. That's the first time since 2015 that the Razorbacks haven't had a Power 5 team on the midweek schedule. I mean, you think back over the past few years, they've played a lot of Big 12 teams in the midweek, whether it be Kansas State or Oklahoma State or Oklahoma, Texas, Texas Tech. Those have all been midweek games for the Razorbacks. They're going to play the other four Division I teams from the state of Arkansas two times apiece. They'll play Arkansas Little Rock twice at Baum. They'll play Arkansas State twice at Baum. They'll play Arkansas Pine Bluff twice at Baum. They'll play UCA once at Baum. That game's going to be on April 5th. And then 3 weeks later on a Tuesday night, they will play UCA again at Dickey Stevens Park. That game, of course, in North Little Rock, the home of the Arkansas Travelers. It will be Arkansas's first time to play in North Little Rock since 2019. In 2020, their game obviously didn't get played because the season got suspended. And then last year, due to just all the uncertainty that surrounded COVID, the Razorbacks didn't play a game in Central Arkansas. So this will be Arkansas's first time to go back down there in 3 years. And it will also be the first time that the Razorbacks will play a game against an in-state team in North Little Rock. These games in the past have typically been against teams from maybe the SWAC. Grambling State has been a popular opponent there. Louisiana Tech has also been a popular opponent from the Conference USA. Arkansas is going to go with an in-state team there. And it's kind of I feel like it's a good scheduling idea for Arkansas because these in-state games a year ago, once the new wore off, and it wore off pretty quickly playing these in-state teams, the games weren't that popular among the fans. Even when the crowd was capped, say at 4,400, you weren't getting 4,400 people in the ballpark to watch these games. You take one of these games down to North Little Rock, where that's the only game that they're going to get during the season, that game's going to get 10,000 people there. And so it gets a game that maybe isn't very popular for your on-campus crowd, and it puts it into a place where you're sure to draw a lot of fans. For now, the SEC tournament is still 12 teams. It will be interesting to see how the tournament changes in the future when Oklahoma and Texas join the league. Of course, that was the big college sports news of the summer. The Sooners and the Longhorns will join the SEC by the fall of 2025, which would mean it would be the 2026 season for baseball. There's some thought that these teams might come to the SEC beforehand, although talking to Hunter Yurecek earlier this week, it sounds like it's not as cut and dry as maybe some people think it is for Texas and Oklahoma just to leave the Big 12 early. I know the Big 12 is expanding with the addition of four teams here recently, but due to the TV contracts that are in place, grant of rights, a term that you hear a lot of times when you're talking about conference expansion,
it's going to make it difficult, I think, for Texas or Oklahoma to come to the SEC very much earlier than what is already in place, which is July the 1st, 2025. I think if they come to the SEC early at all, it might be the 25 baseball season would be the first time that we could see the Sooners and the Longhorns. But for now, it's going to be 2026. Texas adds a lot to the SEC. Of course, the Longhorns were in Omaha a year ago. They had Mississippi State on the ropes in the semifinals, and Mississippi State did what Mississippi State does. They had a late rally, won that game, and of course went on to beat Vanderbilt in the championship series. Texas, coached by David Pierce, they've been very good since he's been there, quite frankly. You remember in 2018 when the Razorbacks played them here in Fayetteville and again in Omaha, they were a good team in 19. They were going to be a really good team in 20 with some experience pitching, and they had a great season in 21. Texas is going to be a factor, I think, in SEC baseball. And you think about the programs right now that really care in the SEC, the Vanderbilts, the Floridas, the LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, of course, Arkansas. A&M cares. That's why they went and got Jim Sosnagle. And so you're talking about Texas is now going to be in that top half of teams, I think, that care about baseball. And it'll be interesting to see what happens for teams like Arkansas that recruit Texas so well. You know, obviously one of the draws of Arkansas is that it is nearby, and it allows the kids from Texas who don't want to go to A&M right now, it allows them a chance to come here, not be too far away from home, and still play in the SEC. Well, of course, now Texas, beginning really with the players that they're recruiting right now, I mean, you've got players who are committing to college baseball teams right now in the class of 2025. And so it's going to be something that they can offer to the younger players in high school right now that, hey, you don't have to leave home now to go to the SEC. You can come over here to Austin and we can provide that for you as well. Will that hurt Arkansas too much? I don't think so. I think Arkansas has got a lot to offer as a program, as you heard Nate Thompson talk about earlier, whether it be just the fact that the Razorbacks are winning, whether it be the fact that they can say Andrew Benintendi and Dallas Keuchel and some of these others are some of the great Major League Baseball players right now, or because of that $27 million Hunt Baseball Development Center that was opened this summer, there's a lot of attraction to Arkansas. As far as Oklahoma coming into the league, they've got a good baseball tradition. They've won a national championship, but they haven't been to the College World Series in over a decade. And really, since Sonny Galloway left that program for Auburn 7, 8, 9 years ago, the program hasn't been the same. I think they've been to the NCAA tournament maybe just three times since then. Oklahoma was set to have a really good team in 2020. You remember they beat Arkansas at Minute Maid Park in the Shriners Classic in Houston. They had great pitching on that team. Cade Cavalli was a first-round pick. And they had others who really complimented him well in that pitching staff. Their head coach, Skip Johnson, is one of the really good pitching coaches in college baseball. I think a lot of people would tell you that. At Oklahoma, what they have going against them is a lack of facilities. They play in a real outdated baseball park. I don't know if it's as bad as Missouri. I think Missouri, anybody would tell you that it's the worst SEC baseball park right now. But when Oklahoma comes into the league, that's going to be a park that probably ranks about 13th, or I'm sorry, I'm thinking on a 14-team SEC. That would be a park that would rank about 15th, basically next to last in the league. Baseball in Oklahoma is very good. We've seen Arkansas go over there and get some players throughout the past. But the Sooners are going to be fighting an uphill battle until they put some more resources into their program. Not only the fact that they're going to be playing SEC baseball, but also the fact that they've got Oklahoma State up the road. Oklahoma State, a very fine program. And of course, they just built that jewel of a ballpark within the last year. So I think Oklahoma and Texas to the SEC, certainly very interesting from a college baseball standpoint, but Texas adds a lot more value. Arkansas, Oklahoma, that has a chance to be a really good rivalry. About 200, 250 miles separate those two campuses. And if you thought Arkansas, Texas was a great atmosphere at Razorback Stadium last week for the football game, wait until you get to Arkansas, Texas, at Baum Walker Stadium or down at Dish Falk Field in Austin. Those are going to be great environments from a college baseball perspective, and that could be a really, really nice rivalry. We haven't had a chance to talk on this podcast about the Major League Baseball draft. The Razorbacks, they had a lot of players. They had a lot of signees who were taken. Most signed, some came back. As far as players on the 21 team, I didn't think there were any surprises in terms of players who were drafted. And I'll tell you why. Kevin Copps, of course, went to the Padres, already has moved his way up to Double-A, had a great Double-A debut the other night in San Antonio. Christian Franklin was a fourth-round pick of the Cubs. Ryan Costue, a seventh-round pick of the Angels. That one might have surprised some people, but it didn't surprise me necessarily because of the velocity that he showed on his pitches. I think there's a lot of thought that he hasn't come close to reaching his ceiling as a pitcher. Casey Opitz, a catcher, going to the Chicago Cubs. Patrick Quicklander to the Tampa Bay Rays and Lyle Lockhart to the LA Dodgers. Those were all top 10-round picks. It was a 20-round draft. Braylon Bishop was an outfielder who at one point a lot of people thought was a first-round pick. Coming out of high school, he grew up in Ashdown, ended up transferring to Arkansas High School in Texarkana. He went to the Pirates in the 14th round and signed. Caden Monk signed with the Royals in the 14th round. Drake Varnado, a shortstop, he is at Arkansas. He turned down a 17th round pick of the or a 17th round offer from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Elijah Trest also back at Arkansas. He was drafted in the 18th round. And then maybe the player that surprised some people, but it didn't surprise me being drafted, was Charlie Welch to the Mariners. Of course, everybody saw the end of the season that he had last year, really had a high value, I think, given a player who didn't have a defensive position. And so for him to get drafted in the 19th round and the ability to start his professional career, I thought it made a lot of sense for Charlie Welch to go on. One of the ones that Arkansas lost as well was Matt Goodhart, who did not get drafted, but signed a free agent contract with the Phillies. Again, with Goodhart, showed some potential and at times was one of the hottest hitters that the Razorbacks had over his 3 years. But the shoulder injury and the lack of a defensive position, I think, hurt him as far as being a draft prospect. So Arkansas came through the draft really well. The big draft story was that Peyton Stovall did not get drafted, was a guy who easily could have been a first-round pick. I think there was interest there in him in the first couple of rounds, but the money wasn't right, and he's a player who thinks he can come to college and improve his value and be a better draft pick in 3 years whenever his time comes to be drafted again. Also, a big one for Arkansas was Jalen Battles not being drafted. The shortstop will be back. He and his father said that they had some conversation with teams in the first few rounds, and again, the money was not right. And so Jalen Battles, because he still has that year of leverage, he'll be back at Arkansas in 2022, and that's a big deal for the Razorbacks, especially defensively. Dave Van Horn will tell you that he thinks he's got the best middle infield in college baseball with Battles at shortstop and Robert Moore at second base, and they're going to be back playing together for a second year next year. Now, maybe the big offseason story for those of you who are listening to us is the change in ticket priority, the overhaul of seats at Baum Walker Stadium beginning in the 2022 season. This probably has affected you if you're listening to this podcast, because you're probably someone who goes out to ballpark and you've gone there for a while. And essentially what's happening, if you don't know about the change in ticket priority, is that the sections in the ballpark are now going to be allocated based on giving to the Razorback Foundation. It has been that way for new ticket buyers for over a decade, but there have been a lot of people sitting in their seats that they got at Baum Stadium in 1996 on a handshake agreement with Norm DeBryan, maybe for $100 a year, and they haven't been giving the value that has been recommended in the seats that they are sitting in or that they have sat in for a number of years. This has caused a lot of hurt feelings among the Razorback fan base, people who supported the program before Dave Van Horn came in and really got the program rolling. About a year, maybe 2 years ago, the Razorback Foundation made a change to where your giving to the foundation was no longer sports specific. And so if you give $5,000 to the Razorback Foundation, that $5,000 counts toward your ability to buy football tickets. It counts toward your ability to buy basketball tickets. And now it's going to count toward your ability to buy baseball tickets. There's a thought that the baseball crowd is going to look a lot different. And I do think Arkansas is going to lose some fans at their games over this change. Anybody who was in the stadium last year, they have the opportunity to keep their seats, but there are going to be many who are unable to. There are going to be families who this affect greatly. I'll talk about that more here in just a second. There are going to be retirees who are on fixed incomes who this is going to affect potentially. Going back to families, one of the things that I think built Arkansas's fan base in the 90s and the 2000s, and even to a lesser extent, maybe within the last 10 to 15 years, has been the affordability of baseball tickets. And baseball tickets, they're still relatively affordable, $250 per season ticket per seat. But now what you have is you have the foundation requirement that is tacked on to the top of this. And so if you're a family of five, you have the ability to keep your seats, but you might have been a family of five going to a game last year for $1,250, which is your season ticket cost, and maybe $100 or $200 donation. And now the ability to buy five tickets together, you would have to pay at least $5,000 to the Razorback Foundation. And so you might have gotten your tickets a year ago for a family of five for $1,450. And now those same five tickets, if you want them together, they're going to be better seats, but you're going to have to pay over $6,200 for them. I don't know that a lot of people can swing that. And so it is going to change the dynamic, I think, within the stadium. There are people who kind of fear that, the people who buy up the seats behind home plate, they're not going to come to all the games. They're buying those seats because they want the ability to have the seats for the super regionals, for the regionals, or maybe the LSU type weekends, and that it might become a little bit more of a Major League Baseball type atmosphere. I think that the Razorback fan base is a very rabid fan base when it comes to baseball. I think it's still going to be a good atmosphere in Baumwalker Stadium, but I do think it's going to be interesting to watch next year just for changing dynamics within the ballpark. And it's unfortunate for a lot of people who supported the program for a long time that their longevity is no longer being taken into consideration when it comes to their seating location in the ballpark. Not that case for everyone who's been a longtime giver, but it's certainly the case for many. And so there will be people who have hurt feelings over this. I've heard from several of them, and there are going to be people who have told me that they've supported Razorback baseball for 20 years or more, and they won't be coming back because they just don't like this change. Change is necessary. I wrote this in our magazine recently that the funds, they've got to be there if you want to have a winning baseball program. I understand the side of the fans who are upset about this change. I also understand the U of A who says that this is about equity, but it's also about money. They say it's not about money, but it's certainly about money. It's about being able to capitalize on a popular program where there's a lot of demand for tickets, and then in turn, be able to reallocate that money back into the program to hire good coaches, retain good coaches, be able to pay for the technology that it takes to be able to develop baseball players at a premium level. There are rising costs in recruiting travel. There's rising costs in travel for charter planes after baseball games in order to be able to get a player back from a Sunday afternoon game in Gainesville, Florida, and have him in place to go to class on Monday morning in Fayetteville. It's just how it is. The costs are going up in college baseball. Hunter Yurachek, when I spoke to him about this story a month or so ago, he told me that Arkansas has more than doubled its investment in baseball over the past 10 years. And you got to believe that in order for Arkansas to keep up with the teams that they are trying to keep up with, that they're going to have to continue to invest and increase their investment in college baseball. And so it's unfortunate, but I certainly understand both sides of that coin. Now, some might think that some of the money is going to pay for the Hunt Baseball Development Center, that new $27 million jewel of a facility in right field. Juracek tells me it's not, that that facility, the money is there to pay for that facility through other means. Of course, there have been a number of donors who've stepped up and given big money toward that facility. I think the Walker family has given between $5 and $6 million. Of course, the Hunt family gave $5 million for naming rights. Others have stepped up and given to that facility as well. You heard Nate Thompson reference it earlier. That's going to be a facility that helps Arkansas in recruiting. And the combination of facilities between the Hunt Center and Baumwalker Stadium and the Fowler Center, which I think gets forgotten about sometimes, that's the indoor baseball facility across the street from Baum Stadium that's attached to the indoor track. That combination of facilities gives Arkansas something unlike you find anywhere else in college baseball right now. And it is it's an attractive piece in the recruiting pitch to a high school athlete. Finally, Dave Van Horn, Nate Thompson, Matt Hobbs, they all received contract extensions and pay raises during the offseason. This was expected for all three, Thompson and Hobbs. Their contracts expired in 2021. They needed to have new agreements. No surprise that Arkansas has been able to keep them. They're two of the big names in college baseball. I think D1 Baseball put out a list earlier this year of the assistant coaches who were in the best position to become head coaches at some point. And both of them were on that list. And I think in the case of Nate and Matt, they can both be a little bit picky. They can be choosy and wait for the right job to come along. But I think that at some point, both of these guys have got a chance to become a head coach. And then for Dave Van Horn, Arkansas did not renew its contract between Van Horn and Easton Bats about a year or 2 years ago. That was something that supplemented his income from the U of a great deal. Arkansas is going to enter into a new agreement with a batting manufacturer at some point. I don't even know if they're going to call it a batting manufacturer. It might be referred to more as an equipment agreement, but that will be between the university and that manufacturer instead of between the head coach and the batting company. Think about back in the 1980s when the Big East coaches, you know, guys like John Thompson and Jim Boeheim were signing personal contracts with Nike. Well, that's essentially what's happened in baseball over the years. But the same way those shoe contracts are no longer between the head coach and the shoe company, it's now between the shoe company and the school. Here you have the same thing happening where Arkansas is going to sign an equipment agreement between the university and whoever that manufacturer ends up being. Dave Van Horn is going to get $1.25 million to start out. That'll be his annual salary. It will increase every year. And he has a series of extensions that are built into his contract that essentially keep him at the U of A through 2031 when he's 70 years old. Van Horn, in the last year or two, I've heard him say several times, he has no intention of retiring. He feels like he has a lot of energy left, and he feels like he has a lot that he can still contribute to the Razorback program. We thank you for joining us today on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Thank you to Nate Thompson for taking time to join us. Again, we will have another podcast toward the end of this month. We will have two more podcasts in October. Until our next podcast, I hope you'll join us at wholehogsports.com. We've got a lot of baseball features and stories that we have planned over the next several weeks as the Razorbacks work their way through fall baseball.
The proceeding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.